My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
And the first question they ask is, that's great, but do you have any video?
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't. And my son was working for me that summer and looked up and said, Dad, that's no big deal. I can create a YouTube video this afternoon. So I went back to the editors of, you know, these top national media. And I said, well, I got a YouTube video. Will that work for you? All five of them said yes.
Wow.
And when the story broke, we were page one on Yahoo News. We were page one on ABC News. We were page one on the Huffington Post. We were page one on CNN.
Welcome to Endless Coffee Cup, a regular discussion of marketing news, culture, and media for our complex digital lifestyle. Join Matt Bailey as he engages in conversation to find insights beyond the latest headlines and deeper understanding for those involved in marketing. Grab a cup of coffee, have a seat, and thanks for joining.
Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Endless Coffee Cup. And I'm particularly excited about today's guest. Greg and I go back a number of years. As with many of the other interviews and guests that I've had on, Greg is one of the premier, and notably one of the earliest, in search engine optimization and in video marketing. By the way, he literally wrote the book on YouTube marketing. And my guest today is Mr. Greg Jarbo. Greg, how are you doing today?
Good, Matt. How's everything out there in Ohio?
Oh, you know, gray and rainy, which means we're in winter, and I think it'll last another 6 months. Greg, you know, I'm sure some of the listeners may know who you are, but for those that don't, could you give them maybe a quick snapshot of your background and really what led you from journalism to YouTube?
Oh, that has been a, what do they call that? A long, strange trip.
Yes.
Well, I did start off as a journalist, believe it or not, as the editor of a newspaper. You remember newspapers? I know, it's very retro. And at one point in time, my wife said, if we're going to afford to have a family, you can't be a journalist anymore. You're not paid enough. So I crossed over into the dark side. I went into public relations. And I worked in high-tech PR in Massachusetts at Wang Laboratories, Data General. I became the director of corporate communications at Lotus Development Corporation back when Lotus 1-2-3 was the best-selling software package of its era. And from there, segued into becoming the director of corporate communications at Ziff Davis, which published PC Magazine and PC Week and PC Computing magazines. And then, oh, that takes me to like 1999. I went off to become the VP of marketing at a .com. And then the .com bubble burst, and I was unemployed and looked around. And the first people who would hire me was a SEO firm. And I had actually used SEO at WebCT and thought it was particularly effective, but I didn't do it myself. I hired a guy to do it for me. And suddenly I found I had to do it for clients. So in 2002, I was learning the trade as the chief marketing officer for Backbone Media. Mm. And then a funny thing happened. Google, in September of 2002, launched something called Google News. And the president of my company said, Charbo, take a look at it and see if there's anything we should, you know about this, you know, do with it, whatever. And I started doing some searches in Google News, and I found, oh, my Lord, there were press releases in the results. Among the 4,500 news sources that Google News crawled and indexed and ranked were Business Wire and PR Newswire and Globe Newswire and PR Web. And I thought, oh, my Lord, I spent a lot of years in high-tech PR. I know how press releases work. I've just spent the last year honing my skills on how SEO worked. I'll bet there's a way we can crack the code and learn how to optimize press releases and turn that into a service. So I took it back to the president of my company and I said, you know, I think this could be a big deal. And he said, no, Greg, that's your thing. That's not my thing.
I think there were a lot of people in that same time frame with those same ideas and were told very similar things.
And so I thought about it for about a month. And then I called up an old friend of mine who I had worked with at Lotus Development Corporation. And I said, Jamie, check this out. I think we can figure out how to optimize a press release so that it gets high rankings. And he said, yeah, big deal. And I said, but that would mean visibility. And he said, yeah, so what? And he was the head of a direct marketing firm at the time. He said, now, if you could put a link in that press release and take people who read it to a landing page on a website, then you'd have something.
Now we can count them. Yes.
And I went, we could do that. So I quit my job. He sold his company. We started SEO PR in early 2003 and started optimizing press releases, initially for SEMPO, the Search Engine Marketing Professional Organization. Mm-hmm. And we were able to track 21% of the organization's revenue.
Wow.
For the first quarter that they existed, back to three optimized press releases.
Wow.
And then in early 2004, I got hired by a little regional airline called Southwest Airlines. You may not have heard of them, but they're down in Dallas. They're a wonderful company. And we started optimizing press releases for them. And we were able to track $2.5 million in airline ticket sales back to a series of, count them, four optimized press releases.
That's great.
And, you know, everyone thought, oh, Jarbo, we know who you are. You're the SEO PR guy. And, you know, that was a good ride for a couple of years. And then in 2006, we hit a wall. We were doing some work for the Christian Science Monitor, and we were trying to optimize a press release and promote a story about one of their reporters, a woman named Jill Carroll, who had been taken hostage in Iraq and held for 82 days and thought every day she was going to die the way her driver and translator had on the first day. And suddenly she got released and she came home and she wrote an 11-part series on what it was like to be a hostage, thinking that you were going to die any day. And the editor-in-chief of the Christian Science Monitor decided that because the story was going to break in mid-August and everyone was on vacation, that it might need some special secret sauce to promote it. So I got hired to optimize the press release and pitch the story to a variety of media in advance of this series breaking in August 2006. And I called editors at CNN and the Huffington Post and, you know, a variety of other places, including, believe it or not, the human editor at Yahoo News. And people don't realize that Yahoo News actually has human editors in addition to their algorithms. The human editors actually determine what's on page one of Yahoo News. And the first question they ask is, that's great, but do you have any video?
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't. And my son was working for me that summer. Technically, it's my middle son. I got three. But all right, Brendan. Brendan was working for me that summer and looked up and said, Dad, that's no big deal. I can create a YouTube video this afternoon.
Our kids. That's great. I find myself even now learning from our daughters, my daughters, and you know, some of the things they show me, and maybe what they don't like about it is every time they show me something, I come back with this experience of, let me tell you how that works. And that's great. And the whole background of it.
So I went back to the editors of, you know, these top national media. And I said, well, I got a YouTube video. Will that work for you? All five of them said yes.
Wow.
And when the story broke, we were page one on Yahoo News. We were page one on ABC News. We were page one on the Huffington Post. We were page one on CNN. We ended up driving 450,000 unique visitors in the first 24 hours to the Christian Science Monitor website. They got 1 million page views.
Wow.
Which was 7 times higher than their daily average because not that I had optimized the press release. Nobody was even talking about that. It was because we'd knocked off a YouTube video the previous afternoon.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, today happens to be Epiphany, but it turns out that's when I had my epiphany. That said, this video thing has legs. And I started focusing on YouTube. This was back before it got acquired by Google later in 2006. Oh, in the fall of 2006, Google acquired YouTube for, billions of dollars. Actually, it was $1.4 billion, so I shouldn't round up. I'll stick with the facts because they're extraordinary enough as it is. And I've been riding the YouTube horse ever since.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing I love about that story is it shows not only the progression of digital and how it affected different industries, but also the technological aspect of it as video has become more and more accessible with broadband, with compression, being able to distribute video, how YouTube changed how we viewed videos. Yeah, I love to tell my kids that we used to have to download videos in order to watch them. That 42-second video that you just had instant access to, years ago, it took me 5 minutes to download it. And then I'd watch it, I'd get a laugh, and then I'd start downloading the next one.
And we've got to remember that at the time YouTube was turning the world on its head, it turns out Google had a competing product. It was called Google Video. And Yahoo had a competing product. It was called Yahoo Video. And, by the way, AOL had Singing Fish. I mean, it wasn't like YouTube was first to the dance. YouTube just ate all their lunches. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. Google had to acquire them, even though they had a competing product, because, you know, Google Video, what's that?
Well, what was it that made YouTube and enabled them to eat their lunch? What was that event that made that happen?
Ah, well, okay. Now you want the secret sauce.
Oh, yeah. Let's go for it.
Okay. So here's what YouTube did that the other video search engines didn't do. All the other players in the market, Google Video, Yahoo Video, Singing Fish, were trying to crawl the web, index videos, and then put them, you know, where they could be then searched for and found. You know, it's the search engine view of the world.
Right, right. Collect, process, and rank.
It turned out that meant that in order for them to find it, the poor people who were uploading it had to spend oodles of time creating metadata so that the search engines would say, oh, this is a video. Oh, that's what it's about. Oh, okay, I guess I should index this for the video search engine. What YouTube did was say, don't worry about that. We're going to put all the videos here. We're going to host them on YouTube. And when you do a search, we're going to find the relevant video for you. And we're going to crawl the headline and the description. And oh, by the way, YouTube took a look at the tags of, on the video. While Google has always sworn off meta tags, you know, we don't look at them, we don't pay any attention to them.
Right.
YouTube said, look, it's hard enough to figure out what the video is. Yeah, we're going to look at the tags. So the first thing that YouTube did was make search easy, but then they did more. And this is where they then crossed over and became a social medium, because after you watch the video, you could share it.
Right.
And it was simple to hit a button and share it to Facebook, or believe it or not, back then, share it to MySpace. I know, I'm, but that was true back once upon a time. That was big. You could share it to Twitter, et cetera. And so YouTube was a hybrid. It was not only a video search engine, and it is still the world's second largest search engine behind only Google if you just count searches conducted per month. But it is also the world's, well, depending on how you define it, first or second largest social media. And the reason why it's depending on how you define it, it's Facebook is out there saying, oh, we're the world's largest social medium. And the answer is, okay, based on what? Well, we've got 2.3 billion average monthly users. And it's like, oh, okay. YouTube, on the other hand, has over 2 billion registered users per month. Now, that's apples and oranges. You can watch a YouTube video without being a registered user.
Yes.
So YouTube is sandbagging. And that's why some of the data that you'll see from places like Pew actually showed that there are more people who are watching YouTube videos in the United States, in the UK, in Canada, in most of the countries of the world, except, of course, China. Then go to Facebook. Facebook actually has a smaller audience, but because they calculate their size and everyone just takes the number without examining it, people have this mistaken assumption that maybe Facebook is bigger than YouTube. It's actually the other way around. Whatever. They are both ginormous. At anywhere north of 2 billion users a month, That's a third of the world's population. That's huge.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely amazing, astounding with those numbers. But also that Facebook uses the monthly active users as a primary index. And I think that's a very important distinction that you brought up. I know one of my devices, I use YouTube without logging into it. That's where I do my research. That's where I find out what's going on. Because I don't want to be tracked. I want the non-filtered use.
And marketers, one of the big missed opportunities by most marketers is you can take a YouTube video and embed it on your website because YouTube has what is called a distributed player.
Right.
And not only then can people come to your website, look at your page, watch the YouTube video on the page on your website, but YouTube will then record that view and watch time over in YouTube, and you get credit for it in two places.
Well, and that's one of the things that was so revolutionary about YouTube. is instead of sending a video through the mail or news groups or whatever, I can embed it on my blog, on my webpage, wherever anyone can watch it. It produces a link back to YouTube, which, you know, is just the double whammy of the whole thing, and what it enables people to do. It's just amazing. Whoever came up with the strategy, I think was just a genius, because I love it. It gave people what they wanted to do. They didn't know they needed it, but once they had it, they loved it, and they couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, and that then is the secret sauce. And so if you want to know the magic formula for being successful on YouTube today, there are three parts.
Oh, here we go.
Part one is you got to discover the video. In other words, that's the video search part. Part two is you've got to watch the video. And that's been a key part of the YouTube algorithm since the fall of 2012. And watch time. If somebody starts watching your video and goes, ugh, guck, I'm out of here, and they bounce out of there at, you know, 10 to 15 seconds, which, by the way, half of your viewers will, then that sends a signal to YouTube that said, you know, they didn't really watch this very long. It must not be a very good video. And so getting watch time is the second ingredient to success. And then the third one is, did people like it after they watched it? Did they share it? Did they embed it? Did they do other things with it? Included in a playlist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the simple formula for YouTube success is you've got to create videos that get discovered, watched, and shared.
That is a great, great formula. I love that. So you've been involved in this. Like I said, you literally wrote the book on YouTube marketing, An Hour a Day. That's the book. And I'm going to reference that. Even though...
Then I have to stop you here.
Yep.
I've got to tell your listeners.
It's a setup. You know this.
Do not buy my book, please. The first edition was published in 2009, in August. The second edition was published in November of 2011. And if you think about it, I just told you the algorithm changed in the fall of 2012. That means that my book is out of date. The advice that I gave you was true way back when, a decade ago, but it is so out of date. The only chapter in the book that isn't woefully obsolete is chapter one, which is a short history of YouTube. The good news is they haven't changed their history. But everything after chapter one, I might as well be talking about, you know, a distant planet or a galaxy far, far away.
Right. It's amazing how quickly things have changed. And I would say what hasn't changed, though, is creating content that people want to see. And from a business standpoint, I YouTube seems to still be an utter mystery for some people. And yet it seems that some businesses are able to very quickly figure out how to use video, and it transformed them. I mean, you gave the Christian Science Monitor example of coming up with video from a journalistic standpoint and what it enabled. But what about businesses, or even B2B businesses? What is that transition of learning and using video effectively in their marketing?
Well, I would love to give you an optimistic appraisal of how businesses have all figured it out, but most of them haven't.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
In fact, here's some hard numbers that you can chew on. In the last 30 days, okay, so we're talking from basically early December through early January, the last 30 days, 8.5 million videos have been uploaded to YouTube by 1.1 million different accounts.
Wow. There's a little bit of competition now.
I'm just setting a baseline.
Oh, yeah.
Now here's the bad news, okay? 6.9 million of those accounts are what I would call influencers or YouTube content creators, and less than 90,000, or a incredibly small percentage, are brands. Mm. In other words, YouTube has been a wonderful opportunity, but the people who took advantage of it are basically, you know, whatever you want to call them, YouTube stars, They were the kids who said, okay, I can go out and do almost anything. And they did.
Right. And they account, I saw a graphic or an article about this, that it's not even the 80-20 rule. It's closer to the 95 to 5% rule that creators account for, I think, 80 to 90% of total views.
Yeah, that's probably true. And those creators, by the way, are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by monetizing their video content with advertising. Many of them are growing up to become small media companies in their own right. And that's where the action is on YouTube. Brands, by and large, and I may have to get on my soapbox here.
Absolutely.
Don't get it. There are exceptions to this rule, but by and large, the vast majority of brands think YouTube is where you repurpose your 30-second long TV commercial.
Right.
Oh, yeah, upload it to YouTube. Okay, right. That's exactly what everyone is looking for. That's what they want to see. Wrong. And as a consequence, oh, look, we aren't getting many YouTube views. This must not be a viable platform. And the answer is, it's incredibly viable for people who are creating content that is unique and original and compelling. In fact, the term I've borrowed from a friend of mine, Guy Kawasaki, who I used to work with at Ziff Davis, is enchantment.
Right.
There are some videos that will enchant you, and that can be inspiring, that can be educational, that can be entertaining, and that can be enlightening, like documentaries are enlightening. And there are people who are making it. And I recently wrote an article for Search Engine Journal where I actually took a look at the top 10 most watched videos on YouTube of 2020. And just for the heck of it, I went through each one, watched it. By the way, it takes 3 hours to watch the top 10.
Wow.
Because the average one is about 15 to 20 minutes long. You know, whoever sold this notion of, oh, make snackable content, you know, was also selling snake oil on the side.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to jump in real quick here because that hits a point that has come up very often that people don't have long attention spans. I hear this all the time. Yeah, that we have to shorten content, hit them quick. They only have a two-second attention span. The goldfish analogy that is brought up all the time about our attention span.
Well, if your target audience is goldfish, then here, let me give you some advice. The point is, it's not that people have short attention spans. These are the same people, by the way, who are binge-watching shows on Netflix.
Right.
So, you know, excuse me, you know, what they have a short span of is patience.
Yes.
If you're creating corporate propaganda that is boring or self-serving, you know what? I got lots of other options on YouTube. In fact, as the number I just shared with you, there's about 8.5 million other new videos that have just been uploaded in the last 30 days. I don't have to sit here because it's too hard to get up and change the channel on TV. I can click away. And that's where the misnomer comes in, is, oh, they have short attention spans. No, they just have a low threshold for crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Quality content.
Yeah. But if you create really good stuff, again, one of the videos that was the most watched videos of the year was about a video game, and it was 44 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was an anomaly. Most of them were in the 15 to 25 minute range. Only one of them, the shortest of the top 10, was 7 minutes long. It was the other anomaly. So again, this is like, excuse me, stop coming up with things that you've heard somewhere and go do your own research, because that's not what's working.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's quality content. And I could see that, the content that I consume on YouTube, the content my kids consume on YouTube. I will say the vast majority of what we are all consuming are videos that are longer than 30 minutes. And I've been amazed, especially at some of the channels my kids watch, of movie reviews or history. They're breaking down a movie. They're talking about a historical event for 30 minutes or longer. Some are 60 minutes. And also, you've probably seen this as well. As a family, we're watching YouTube on our big screen. We're watching it on our TV. It's not just on the phone or the desktop. It's now we're finding ourselves watching TV shows that we can't access anywhere else. And YouTube has given us the ability to do that.
Yeah. Over the holidays. Yeah. I have Netflix. Boy, I think I've seen everything there I want to see. But I also have YouTube. And you know what? They had all the original James Bonds with Sean Connery.
Yes.
On YouTube for free. And I'm sitting there watching them on my television on YouTube. And oh, by the way, they're an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that has been one of the biggest dynamic changes is YouTube moving from the small screen to the big screen, people watching in their living rooms.
And but let's go back to the small screen, because it turns out 70% of the watch time on YouTube is still coming from mobile devices.
Right.
And yes. The average mobile device, the YouTube viewing session on, a smartphone, is 40 minutes long.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, this, oh, they're goldfish is like, have you met one of them lately?
Right. Oh, I know. So a prime example is my daughter. She gets ready for school. She's got her phone, her headphones in. She's listening to a YouTube video the entire time she gets ready for school. And even just in the ride to school, she's listening to YouTube, watching it. It's just become part of daily life. And sometimes I get upset, but then I realized when I was younger, I had the Walkman on, you know? I had the Walkman on, the headphones on. It's been replaced with YouTube.
I'm even older. we won't go there.
Yeah. No, I just have to remind myself, I did the same thing, except I used a Walkman, headphones on constantly, listening to music, and now she's doing the same thing, but with YouTube, so I need to be patient. You know, it's just a different medium.
Yes, yes. You had the Walkman. I had this huge boombox on my shoulder. So, this is like the evolution. People are now wearing earbuds. But, yeah, no, I'm back there in the misty mist of the pasty past, lugging around this huge thing.
Oh, I'm not too much far away. I'm not too much further. I had one of those, too. Yeah, maybe not. Yeah, you either went big or, you know, you went with the boombox or you had the Walkman. I preferred the Walkman because you can do things. You don't have to carry it on your shoulder and get, you know, shoulder problems as you get older.
Both you and I grew up in the Midwest where we had the space to walk around with a boombox on our shoulder. And it wouldn't really cause a riot or whatever. But anyhow.
Right. Yeah. Everyone else had to listen to what you were listening to. And selection wasn't always the same.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
If you are a regular listener of Endless Coffee Cup, well, you know I love coffee. If you are listening for the first time, then the name of the podcast should be a big clue. I love conversation, and I think that we have a lot to learn from each other if we only take the time to sit and talk over a cup of coffee. Maybe we'll come to a resolution, maybe not, but at least we've learned from each other. It's in this spirit that I'm happy to announce a regular sponsor of the Endless Coffee Cup, a coffee sponsor. In Care of Coffee is a coffee company that is unique in the market.
They are directly tied to the communities that produce coffee and ensure that the proceeds go to the coffee farmers, the local producers, and their communities. There are no middlemen or markups. The proceeds from the sales go directly to the communities that work so hard to bring us the enjoyment of a great cup of coffee. Go to incareofcoffee.com, follow the link in the notes, and use the code ENDLESS to get 10% off your order. Again, that's the discount code ENDLESS to get 10% off your order. I'm enjoying the whole bean Weiwei Tenango coffee today. Please support our sponsor and know that your support goes directly to the farmers, producers, and communities that help power us here at the Endless Coffee Cup podcast.
Well, let's talk about businesses and how can they figure out YouTube? Let's talk about some of the ones that have figured it out.
Okay. So like I said, there are exceptions to the rule, and some of those exceptions, and let's just take the B2B one, because that's the one that always, oh, but it won't work in B2B because YouTube is a consumer platform, right? And the answer is, well, there's a lot of people there, but that's like saying a lot of people use telephones. So I guess a phone call is a consumer communication, and business people, particularly in sales, would never use a phone, right?
Right. Yep.
Get real. And so it turns out one of the B2B clients that we've worked with in the past, in fact, you and I have both taught at Rutgers University. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Rutgers does is it offers custom education programs. One of the custom education programs they put together was for a company in the state of Washington in the town of Bothell. And when I told my wife I was going to Bothell, she said, "You're going to a brothel?" But anyhow, the company is called Sonosite, and they make medical devices, portable ultrasound devices.
Yes.
Their customers are hospitals. Their system costs several hundred thousand dollars. So this is not a consumer purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is not a pregnancy test. This is hospital equipment. The average sales cycle when we started was like 9 months to evaluate these portable ultrasound systems before a hospital would decide to make a purchase.
Right.
And we took their YouTube video channel. We optimized it. We worked with them on the strategy for the kind of content that they were creating, et cetera. And a number of things happened. From a measurement perspective, we went from having fewer views than GE Healthcare, which was our primary competitor, mm-hmm. to having more views than GE Healthcare by a factor of four. So, okay. People were watching this stuff. But the important thing was the people who were watching this stuff were watching content that was basically how to do heart surgery.
Wow.
Using a portable ultrasound device to, you know, guide you. And it was like, excuse me, that's the hot video? And one of the things that the company saw was that their average sales cycle, which had been 9 months before their YouTube channel got optimized, shrank down to 7 months.
Wow.
Because in every business-to-business buying situation, there is a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, somebody in the committee misses the meeting where the salesman comes in to do the demo. And, you know, things take time, blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, you've got to get the buy-in from the doctors who have their own opinions about what the hospital should be using, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, the fact that, oh, these videos are now available meant that the decision makers on the committee could catch the demos. The physicians in the hospital could figure out, is this going to be hard to learn how to use?
Right.
Oh, wait, they're going to show me how I can use it in this setting and that setting. And, oh, cool. And they accelerated their revenue, their annual revenue by double digits. I think it was in low double digits, 11, 12%, something like that,
mm-hmm.
by basically shortening the sales cycle using video.
Wow.
To help with the process.
That is powerful. And that's where I've also seen businesses excel. And I like to go back. I'm going to give credit to the show, Dirty Jobs. If you remember Dirty Jobs and that show, because, you know, here's this guy, Mike Rowe, going around doing the most mundane, dirty, filthy jobs. But to use your word, people were enchanted. They were enchanted by this show. They wanted to see behind the scenes. And they want to see someone slogging it out, doing something that nobody sees. And, you know, the show is still on. There's repeats, and it's still one of the highest rated repeat shows. And that was always my message about what you can do with YouTube is show people what goes on behind the scenes. Like, how do you put things together? How do you build it? How do you use it? How do you, you know, what are the applications here? And that's the formula that Sonosite used. Here's what it looks like in live fire.
So they've been incredibly successful. They went on to get acquired by Fujifilm for close to $1 billion. Oh. But again, they are the rare exception. Most companies go video. I'll get an intern to work on that.
Right. Or just, we'll upload what we've already got. That's what people want to see. And I think a lot of that may have been driven by Geico. And I think at one point many years ago, they were just throwing their commercials on YouTube. And I remember my kids were going and watching them because they were so entertaining.
Well, let me share a secret about Geico, though, because I've examined their stuff. I have not worked with them. So this is not like my divulging some secret that I signed a non-disclosure form on. But they did a series called The Unskippable Video.
Yes. Great series.
Brilliant series. But the theory behind it was video should be short.
Right.
And we're going to create one that is so short you can't even skip it. Because guess what? At the 5-second mark, you can click skip ad and jump past your video to go to the thing you actually want to watch. And so their videos were shorter than 5 seconds. Well, they actually created a series of these, 6 of them. Only one actually got lots of views. And part of that was because they were advertising it extensively. In other words, they were putting a huge purchase behind it. So it gave the impression that, oh, wow, look at all the views that this video is getting. And the answer is actually no, not really. One of their other videos that they had created for the YouTube channel, which featured a little pig going wee, wee, wee all the way home.
Right. That's it.
was actually getting more real views, organic views, and being shared more frequently than the so-called short one that they hyped that was, quote, unskippable. So, that was a head fake. A lot of people bought into that myth.
Yep.
But again, they didn't dig down and say, well, let's take a look and see how it works and why it works. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't work.
Well, one of the unskippable labs, one of their studies they did, I believe was a Mountain Dew ad, where they compared the short version, a regular 30-second ad, but then they also did a recut. And that recut, I believe, was well over 2 minutes. It was an extended version of the ad with a music soundtrack, and it was fun. And they noticed that views were higher, the engagement was higher on the extended cut, and that's what people were sharing. It was more entertaining. And also, more people were watching it on the big screen, not just the phone.
And then they did follow-on research, and they found that people not only remembered the video better at higher rates, but were more persuaded to purchase the damn product than the short stuff, which was, quote, only for, quote, a burst of awareness. So again, it's like, what are you trying to do? Tease me or get me to buy your damn product?
Actually meeting the goal that we have for marketing. I love it. That's great.
You can't use video to sell stuff, can you? It's like, actually a lot.
Absolutely. And that was one of the statements that I think was most impactful for me when I watched that series was someone saying, we don't know what works on video. We're still learning because it's video to TV to video on YouTube, and internet video is still such a new and dynamic thing that we're trying to figure it out. And yet you have content creators.
Yeah, the content creators are all worth watching and studying because they're willing to take the experiments to see what works and what doesn't work and learn from it. Most big brands are in the, it's probably going to cost money, so let's just be as safe as possible and do what we did last week again. And as a result, there isn't as much experimentation, there isn't as much risk-taking, and there isn't as much learning about, oh, that's surprising, that worked way better than I thought it would.
Right, yeah. It's a long-term proposition that requires investment, and I don't think a lot of marketing calendars will account for that.
Oh, well. And all that was true before coronavirus hit.
Right. Absolutely.
Talk about risk-averse behavior today. It's like, you know, don't do anything unless it's absolutely guaranteed to work 100% of the time. And it's like, okay.
Well, that's just not marketing.
Well, you know, actuarial tables work like that in insurance companies.
Right.
So I can tell you how long your company has before it dies if you try to stick to your knitting when the rest of the world is changing rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing how things have changed recently. And watch time on YouTube has just gone crazy with so many creators. I've seen their traffic double or triple. My wife has been following a yoga channel prior to the pandemic, and in January, she signed up for the app. She's a follower, and seeing, seeing the amount of views, subscribers, double, maybe triple over the pandemic, and it seems like everyone she talks to is following the same yoga channel, so there's so many people.
Yoga is one of those categories that literally took off. Mm-hmm. People were stuck at home. They weren't going to the gym anymore. And, well, what do? I know. I'll do yoga.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And, well, what do I do? What are the poses? YouTube was one of those categories. There were others. Boy, I can't tell you how many people learned how to make sourdough bread by watching YouTube, you know. So, again, there were huge categories that took off. And, by and large, most brands missed the boat.
Yeah. And absolutely. And cooking, like you said, with sourdough and cooking that, there are so many. And that's one of the things that, well, just to backtrack a little bit, we've been teaching a course during the pandemic. And one of the things you pointed the students to is Google Trends to look and see what areas have been affected by coronavirus and the pandemic and the amount of people looking for cooking, business ideas, sewing, just so many different things have just gone crazy. And now that people are at home and have time, sewing, and these are big brand areas.
And there are brands or product categories in Southeast Asia. So both you and I have been also teaching in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've seen in Southeast Asia is that, again, with more people spending time at home, they are buying more kitchen products.
Yes.
And so if you've got anything that people are going to be using at home for their own cooking, that's where the spike in sales are happening. And, oh, by the way, before people want to buy it, they want to see a demo. Mm-hmm. Or they want to hear a friendly person explain to them, not only can you use it for this, but you can use it for that. You know, show me, show me, show me, show me.
Well, and I think that's part of it too, Greg, is that a content producer can develop something like that and have fun with it. Whereas I think many times when we talk about corporate video, brand advertising, it's driven by that actuarial table that you talked about, that we wanted to succeed. And in large part, it gets end up being driven by a committee that doesn't know how to have fun. And that's what people ultimately are on YouTube to do.
Well, invariably, it's the committee doesn't want to take risk.
Yes, yes.
And the entrepreneurial YouTube star puts it out there every day.
Right.
And not everything works. But you know what? They bounce back the next day with a new video. Now, that's another thing that we see is that the really, really, really successful brands on YouTube, and I'll take, believe it or not, there are brands that are successful on YouTube like Red Bull or Lego. They are creating tens or to 20 videos a day. A day. Mm. And most brands, if they upload a new video a month, think they've been busy. And they have no idea that, you know, pardon me, if you've got something that people want, they'll come back again tomorrow.
Right.
This isn't a once in a blue moon kind of proposition. This can become must-see, you know, not TV, but, you know, well, if you were watching it on your connected TV, then yeah, maybe even must-see connected TV.
Well, and it hits the algorithm, the frequency. The more frequently you publish, the more views you'll get. And that's one of the things I find so interesting about YouTube is every time you go, you see content that is completely unique to you based on your viewing habits, based on who you're subscribed to. And so the more the brand is publishing, the more the latest videos will be displayed to the people who have watched them.
Oh, and I've learned this the hard way. I have grandchildren, and they do come to visit now and then, although not so much lately because we're maintaining our social distance. But when they were visiting, they would come and they would watch, oh, Peppa Pig, or they would watch, well, let's put it this way. Their viewing habits were different than mine.
Right. I know exactly where you're going.
But when the grandkids would then leave for the next several weeks, it's like, the suggestions on, oh, you were watching a lot of this, you know, can we show you more? It was like,
absolutely.
No, they've gone.
Well, you know what? That is one of the biggest contentions in our house. That is the source of arguments. It's the source of so much going on that over time, you know, you are not to watch YouTube on someone else's account. Everyone has different tastes and they follow different people. And so here's my wife. Hers is all yoga and personality types and a little history. And one of the kids watched Minecraft on her account. And so at dinner time, our family conversation was reinforcing that you need to watch YouTube on your account and not on somebody else's account. It has become so personal, our account and our feed, that if someone messes it up, we can't operate. So let me, my goodness, I can't believe how much the time has gone. We have gone through so much. Greg, what's the secret sauce? Let's get into this. You talked a little bit about algorithm changes, and we've seen it changes in the past few years. You went through your three-parter, but I want to know, you know, we're getting towards the end here. Let's finish it with a whammy. If you're getting into YouTube, it, you know, what do you need to know? And about the algorithm and creating a channel, what are some aspects that you would recommend?
Sure, sure. So I'm going to divide it into three parts again, because that's what I said. You got to discover, watch, and share. It turns out today, we're talking January 2021. So, you know, this is always subject to revision. Why? Algorithms change. That's why. But as of today, I would say about 70% of the algorithm is weighted on watch time. Mm-hmm. So your first priority, absolute priority, is to make video worth watching. And what does that mean? Well, that means don't worry about how long it runs. When you're done telling your story, stop. But don't worry if your story runs longer than you've been told it should.
Right.
Focus on telling a great story. If you're in the middle of teaching someone the secret to success, no one's going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you've passed the 3-minute mark. I don't want to learn the rest of how to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So make your story compelling. And again, that's 70% of the algorithm is going to take a look at, you know, you hook people at the beginning, and that's one of the editing techniques. Tell people what you're going to tell them before you tell them. You know, give them the preview that lets them know that, yeah, this video may run for, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, but boy, you're going to want to hang in there for the full amount, because this is stuff
right.
You're going to want to watch. So content first, content foremost. And storytelling is wonderful because stories have ups and downs and surprises and setbacks. And you know what? All that then keeps people with you over an extended period of time. So that's step one. Step two is then you got to help people discover the story. So that's then the optimization part. You know, if you've got a bad video, no amount of optimization is going to save your butt.
Well, that is good advice all around, Greg.
Yeah. So, but if you've got a great story, then it's about Jill Carroll, who writes for the Christian Science Monitor, and she was a hostage in Iraq. You know what? I just figured out what the words in your headline, in your description, right, and in your tags ought to be. And yeah, your headline can be up to 100 characters long, but only use about half of them. If you've got a headline that's about 50 characters long, that's the sweet spot. In your description, you can sneak in 5,000 characters or roughly 800 words in your description. Boy, if your description is running north of 400 words, you probably got too much. But 400 words is, boy, a whole lot more than one or two sentences and saying, well, I guess I'm done.
Right.
And when it comes to your tags, believe it or not, 20 to 30 tags is okay. In fact, you might even be able to go up to 40, depending on how many characters are in your tags. And don't use one-word tags. That's like saying, hi, I still live in 2005. It's like, no, two-word tags, three-word tags, four-word tags, even five-word tags,
wow,
are appropriate in the mix these days. And again, if you start sprinkling 20 to 30 to 40 of those, now people can begin to discover the great story that you've told. And then last but not least is the share. And that gets you to the end of the video where you're going to get to your call to action. What is it you want people to do next? And if you're a storyteller, it may be, I want you to watch another one of my videos and get another story. So your call to action at the end might be in your end screen to say, here's another video that you may want to watch if you like this one. Or, again, if you're a brand, it may be if you really think this product is interesting, click on this link. We'll take you to a landing page on our website. Hmm. But, you know, give people a thing to do next. Please subscribe to my channel. Whatever your call to action is, watch more videos, subscribe to the channel, visit my website. That's the last 10%. So if 70% is your content and 20% is optimizing it so it gets discovered, the last 10% is give them a good call to action.
That is fantastic. I love it. Greg, it has been probably one of the fastest hours I have done on this podcast. I always enjoy talking with you.
Well, scientists say that the Earth is spinning faster for some reason. So
I agree with that.
Maybe that's having an impact on the time here.
That is fantastic. I love it. Love it, Greg. It has probably been one of the fastest hours I've done on this podcast. As always, always enjoy talking with you. Greg, I'd love to have you back. And for one of the reasons, we talked a little bit about creators, but not specifically about creators. What are they doing and what works? And it's one of the things I noticed over the Christmas season. I went to Best Buy. I was looking for some gifts and also some equipment. But one of the things I noticed in Best Buy is that all of the audio and video equipment was being marketed to vloggers, content creators, YouTubers. It was being sold in packages, and everything was targeted to those people who wanted to be a YouTube personality, who want to be a podcaster. I was amazed at the emphasis on everything being packaged to being a producer. It was absolutely astounding to see how they were positioning all of this, all these products.
Well, again, I'll just say I'd love to come back. I would love to talk about it. And oh, by the way, that's where the bulk of the YouTube content is coming from today. As I told you, 6.9 million content creators have uploaded a video in the last 30 days.
Wow.
And that radically changes the world. I remember when the world went from 3 television channels to, what, 57 television channels?
Right, right. And 4 were pretty good.
Yeah. Well, now imagine millions.
Right.
Millions of YouTube channels. And that's, again, one of the reasons why if your stuff isn't really enchanting, they have lots of options.
Oh, you're not kidding. And that's having teenagers to me is like a great research lab, because I love to find out what they're watching, what they're listening to, you know, who they're following on YouTube. And they're treating YouTube like a podcasting medium. They're listening to more and more things that, you know, it's almost indistinguishable. It just has video. And they're getting information about things that they loved 10 years ago.
Right. And let me then leave you with this fun little suggestion.
Oh, yes.
If you want to see a video that is done really, really, really well in the last 30 days, go take a look at Google Year in Search 2020.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
It has 237 million views.
Wow.
And excuse me, I used to think SEO was a geeky little niche that there were only about, you know, 20 of us. Wow. And so that's another one of the so-called exceptions. There is a brand, Google, who gets it. Well, they actually went and bought YouTube. So
there you go.
That's how.
Yep.
Yeah, they got it. But the answer is, you know, they're telling a story. The story just happened to be the year in search.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very compelling, and they do great, great work. I mean, they've got a mountain of data that they sit on and analyze, and they've got people to go through it, but the way they produce it to tell a story is, yeah.
So it's doable.
It's phenomenal.
But yes, love to come back and talk about the content creators, and no, only a really, really, really small percentage become gazillionaires, but I know a lot of people who make more than $100,000 a year as a YouTube creator. And boy, that's a good gig.
Oh, absolutely. One thing I've realized is, you know, we're starting to do that already, but I don't think people realize the work that it takes behind the scenes. It's not just shoot the video and put it on YouTube. Just an amazing amount of editing and work behind the scenes that go into it.
There is a lot of work. It also helps if you are focused on a target audience. If you know who your target audience is, then all of a sudden your work gets focused and you are much more likely to connect with that audience than if you have a vague, fuzzy idea of who your audience is, because you probably never, ever will connect with them, because you're just, you know, you're one of millions of channels. Why should I watch you occasionally?
Well, and that's just great marketing advice.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, Greg. Hey, thank you so much. It has been a joy to talk with you. I always enjoy connecting, catching up, and hearing some of the stories of the history of the medium and how it affects us now. I really appreciate you coming on time. Yeah, coming on board today. Really appreciate that. And listener, hey, thank you so much for joining us on another episode of the Endless Coffee Cup podcast. I look forward to sharing with you again very soon. Please be sure to subscribe, share the episode, maybe even let me know what content you're enjoying listening to and what you would like to hear more of. So thank you so much for your time today, and I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of the Endless Coffee Cup.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.